You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Adam Lowy and the Lowy Law Firm. Be sure to tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking this morning, get your questions in. We'll get to those here in just a little bit. But first, guys, let's talk about the portal. We've talked about it all week, but still a lot going on, including a visitor on campus today and then a exit yesterday. What's the latest?
Yeah, I think a huge visitor on campus right now. Blake, I don't know if you have the tweet from a family friend there last night that he posted once Dominic Williams was on campus. But Dominic Williams, defensive tackle from TCU, the best defensive tackle available in the portal, in my opinion. A guy who's going to play multiple years in the NFL is going to do that over the football. I think he's just a tremendous player. I've compared him favorably to both Byron Murphy and Andrew Billings from the standpoint of the chip on the shoulder in the correct way, out to prove the doubters wrong, went to all the camps, to a lot of camps with the Blue Bloods. Those Blue Bloods didn't offer him. Obviously, Byron Murphy was a Baylor commitment until Texas flipped him late. But look, this is a guy who it goes out every day to kick people's butt and prove to people that I should have been one of those highly ranked guys. I should have been one of those highly sought after recruits nationally by Blue Bloods. And he went to TCU and he proved it. And now Oklahoma, Texas, Oregon, LSU, everybody wants him, right? That's the way of the portal. So I think his skill set, his talent, his fit that he plays over the ball, he can also play at a three, but he's really good over the ball. Combined with that chip on his shoulder makes him a tremendous prospect out of the portal. Obviously, it would be a huge need filler for Texas. I think he's a difference maker type of player, and we'll see what happens there. But he's on campus. He finished up classes. We reported this on TexasFootball.com yesterday, a morning before the show. He was going to finish up classes, get done by between one or two, then make his way to Austin with family members. So he got in last night. I think around 7 p.m. or something. But today's the big day for the visit. Last night, you get in late, check into the hotel, you know, have a little dinner, whatnot. But today is a full day of University of Texas football, where that's Steve Sarkisian, first ever meeting with Kenny Baker, right? I mean, a sit down in the Texas football facility, really getting down to football with Kenny Baker. Same with PK, Johnny Nance, and all those guys. I mean, it doesn't mean they haven't talked to him since he jumped into portal, but it's different when you sit down with him and his family members and really talk about University of Texas football, the opportunity, the way they see the fit, everything else. A huge visit for Texas with Dominic Williams from TCU. Bobby, he visited OU over the weekend. I'm not sure Oklahoma has as much confidence as they once did since he didn't shut it down. Obviously, LSU still working to get him on campus as well as scheduled to have him on campus later this week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but we do know this, Texas is all in. They understand the importance of this recruitment and how very good of a player he is.
Yeah, he is the guy that everybody's pointing to right now because obviously a defensive tackle identified early after the winter portal evaluation period that Texas was going to need to go there. We talked about it all spring, Jerry, and now the time has come where they have to domino. You know what I mean? Yeah. Things have to go right. And so this recruitment, very, very important for the Longhorns. You mentioned they're pulling out all stops. He's staying at the Four Seasons. Not that every recruit doesn't stay at the Four Seasons these days. I got a Lamborghini outside for him. All of that stuff. The reality of it is that Texas needs that nose guard that has a potential to be an NFL player right away. And I think that is what they're looking for. Some people are asking in the chat.
Yeah.
Simeon Barrow Jr., the Michigan State defensive tackle. It's our understanding that right now Texas would be in wait and see mode on any other defensive tackle if Williams were to make a decision in favor of the Longhorns. So that's really where they're at right now.
I think the key with a Simeon Barrow Jr., who is a very good player, Texas has taken a look at him. The question there is, how big is he in reality? Right? He's been listed at 6'2", he's been listed at 6'3", 305, 285. How big is he in reality does play into this as far as what Texas needs. Somebody's asking about Denver Harris. We're going to get the corners, obviously, in a second, but I want to knock the Denver Harris out now. Absolutely not. It's a possibility. All right, moving on. Yeah,
let's talk corners, as you mentioned it. Terrence Brooks announcing yesterday that he is transferring from the University of Texas. He started all of last year for the Longhorns. Had a good season, not a great season, but a good season, Jerry. A much improved defense from the Longhorns a year ago. He heads to the portal, but I'm not so sure that this was necessarily completely his choice. You know, the Longhorns, I think, wanted to get better at corner somehow, needed more speed. Brooks, I'm just going to say this, and I happy for him that he was a Longhorn and stuff, but he gained 12 pounds in the offseason. That's number one. Number two, he busted coverage in the spring game, and that hasn't been uncommon for him in some ways. I'm thinking that Texas is just going to go after somebody that they think, and I put it this way, is Terrence Brooks a potential NFL player? The answer is yes. Is he a potential top 3-round draft pick? Probably not right now. He doesn't run well enough. And so I think Texas is going to look potentially going into the portal and finding a guy that could be a high round draft pick. And there's only one right now that I know of that's in that category, and that's Tecario Davis at Arizona, the 6'4" corner that had 15 pass breakups a year ago. Texas will obviously have to get him on campus and do all of that stuff. But Jerry, and this is an important but, the Longhorns now certainly in the a week ago, we were saying, oh, they might take a best player available. Now they're saying definitely going to go get a corner probably. That's the difference.
Yeah. No, I think Tecario Davis absolutely a big-time player, corner. And look, here's the thing is one of the things I was told, and I do think it rings true, is Texas wants a little more length and vertical speed at that corner position headed into the SEC because there's a difference in consistent week in and week out talent level of the taller, longer arm, vertical threat guys who can really run in the SEC at the X or outside wide receiver. That poses a little bit of a different look than what Texas went up against in the Big 12 on a week in, week out basis. It's just a more talented league. There's better athletes. There's more speed. I mean, that's not a secret. Anybody that doesn't think it's true, just go watch the NFL draft every year and look at the numbers. It's 100% true. So Texas does need to address some of that at the corner position. Is got to have height. You got to have a little length. But most importantly, you got to have vertical speed to run with these outside wide receivers in the SEC. That doesn't mean every team has them, but more teams than not have more speed on the outside at wide receiver than what Texas has been going against in the Big 12. So that is a big part of this. If you're looking at another corner, Bobby, that we mentioned on Texas Football that I think is a really good player and he's a great story, is Anthony Johnson Jr. out of Western Kentucky. He's a kid who he came out of Miami, Norland. He also went to Pace High School. Those kids bounce around, in South Florida from high school to high school, depending on where coaches move in the public school ranks down there. But he played at Norland and Pace. He went to West Florida, and then he ended up at Western Kentucky. So he started out of a smaller school, went to Western Kentucky, had a tremendous season his first year a Division I football, 44 tackles, four interceptions. He's another guy we have our eye on and on Texas football. We're not saying anything for sure is going to happen, but we have our eyes on him a little bit too. But Takario Davis is the number one guy.
All right, guys, we'll come back to some of these questions regarding some of these portal prospects in a minute. But first, Bobby, can you tell folks out there about Adam Lowy and the Lowy Law Firm?
Yeah, absolutely. Adam's a friend of the program. Every Wednesday's Coffee and Football brought to you by Adam Lowy and the Lowy Law Firm. If you've been injured in a car wreck, truck wreck, automobile accident, even an ATV accident, give Adam and his group a call or reach out to them at lowylawfirm.com. They give you a free consultation to see if they think you might be due any compensation for your injuries or the accident itself. Again, lowylawfirm.com, no strings attached, free consultation. Hey, Jerry, I want to go back and just get your broader thoughts on Terrence Brooks. You know, is it a situation where his best position likely would have been safety and he played corner? Because he wanted to be a corner. And now because of that, he's not necessarily as highly thought of as a corner as he might be another position in the defensive backfield. Because, look, there he was a five-star coming out. And he had some five-star traits, certainly. His ability to glom onto receivers when he was in coverage was pretty good. Yeah. My question there is, should he have been a safety all along or a nickel or something else other than a quarter? And would that have given him a better chance at a high ranking when it comes to the NFL?
Yeah, so I think, I go a couple of different ways on this. I think you can play corner in college and go play safety in the NFL. There's college football is different than the NFL. It's scheme dependent. He's, you know, his strength is actually as a press corner. Terrence Brooks has an 80-inch wingspan at 5'11 and a half or however tall he actually is without shoes on. That is extremely long arms for a corner. So he can play corner scheme dependent in college football, and he can play it well. There's no question about that. I think long term, as his frame has continued to fill out, I mean, he's 210 pounds at 5'11 and a half right now. He is built in his lower body like a running back. He doesn't have that sleeker corner build that most guys have in the NFL. I think Terrence Brooks is going to play in the NFL. I think it'll probably be at safety, but I think he's a good player. So that's my main takeaway on that is in college, I think he can play anywhere scheme dependent. And the pro level, I think safety is going to be a spot.
All right, y'all. Well, one of the other things that we need to talk about, the NFL draft coming up starting tomorrow. And interestingly enough, Jordan Johnson-Rubel actually posted this on his Instagram, I believe yesterday. High schools with the most NFL draft picks over the last decade. Of course, you see IMG up there at 18 where he went.
Not I was right. going to say, is that even fair? I mean, is IMG really counting?
I was trying to word that, Bobby.
You know, they get guys from California, New York, and Pennsylvania, and Texas. I mean, does that really even count?
Well,
that's like saying back in the day, what was the Fork Union would count as a high school back in the day, Jerry? That's not fair.
Well, look, if you look at the list, though, to what I'll say to that is St. Thomas Aquinas private school. So they literally get the pick of the litter in Dade, Broward, Palm Beach County for many years. American Heritage, private school, Plantation, Florida. I think those two schools is why you've seen the Miami inner city schools, public schools, numbers go down a little bit. Bishop Gorman, private school, who gets kids from L.A., Oregon. Kids from Oregon have even played at Bishop Gorman. So I think DeMatha. Same thing in D.C., right, Bobby? Kids come in from all over the place to those schools. So if you look, yeah, those private schools are on top. But IMG Academy has got there in short order. Obviously, they should, but they've got there in short order. But the other thing it tells you, what this tells you when you look right here, how much talent there truly is in the state of Florida. I've always said this. I think Florida, for me, is – the most talented, purely talented state in the country, because those kids are really raw coming out of that state now. I mean, there's not junior high football there.
I want to say this though, Jerry. Look, go back to that list real quick. Yeah. I want to say, I don't disagree with you because I've been down there myself and I've seen it. Look at the list. All but one of them, okay, is in Miami. Dade and Broward.
Exactly.
Fort Lauderdale, American Heritage is in Hialeah. Miami Northwestern is like 10 minutes outside of downtown.
Exactly.
And then Miami Central is about 7 minutes outside of downtown.
Yeah.
So all of those guys, they also, football is the sport of choice down there without question.
Yeah.
So a lot of Texas players nowadays and high school athletes are playing baseball. I mean, when's the last time you heard of a guy from the city of Miami playing baseball? You don't hear about it.
Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, he's not a highly recruited guy. But that's it.
My point, though, Jerry, is it's a little bit more concentrated because of the sport concentration as well. I mean, it's not just there's more talent down there, period, because I think Texas is producing more basketball players right now than Florida.
Yeah. So, look, Odin Horns kind of got to my point I was making. Why are Florida high school players so raw, skinny, underdeveloped? That's the thing. Look, there's no middle school football in the state of Florida, in public school football. These kids play youth football until high school. In the public schools, it's not the setup that Texas and Georgia have. So kids come out really raw out of that state. But the one thing about that state I'll say is I lived there for a while, also did Under Armour camps, did this nationally for years. Kids see football as their way out in Florida in a lot of cases. And that's a big, big thing for kids down there. And you've seen what happened in that state is when Alabama, Georgia started plucking a lot of those guys. What's been so interesting that didn't happen in the state of Texas or didn't really happen in the state of Georgia, that happened in the state of Florida over the years, is a lot of those kids, if you watch the old 30 for 30 Miami U, stuff, those kids never went anywhere else. They never saw any other schools. But when 7-on-7 started and these kids really started getting out and saying, whoa, the Miami facilities doesn't really compare to what I'm seeing at Alabama and Georgia and Tennessee and Auburn and all these other places, recruiting got a lot more difficult in Dade and Broward for the Miami Hurricanes. Wow. That's a big part of it. And look, and we talk about this with Texas is, and since Miami's kind of been like this and Florida's kind of been like this and FSU to a certain extent's been like this, recruiting in the state of Florida is a really good opportunity. I mean, Alabama, just think about the players that Nick got from South Florida, Georgia. Texas is more Orlando, Tampa, Southwest Corridor. They're going to work their way up into Jacksonville, but it's a state you can go get really good players from because unlike Texas, not all those guys are staying in state. The days of Bowden and Spurrier and Miami dominating college football aren't there anymore. So those kids will leave the state. And I love that Texas is spending more resources, meaning more time spent in Florida recruiting.
Here's the other issue. Northwestern and Central are both city schools.
Yeah.
Okay. Miami, what is it? The can't remember. I think it's the Broward Unified District or the Dade. I don't know how they call it down there. But where's Dallas Carter on that list?
Yeah.
That would have been 20 years ago. Where's Houston Yates?
Yeah.
That would have been on that list 20 years ago. I'm telling you, those guys are playing more basketball. Whereas in Miami, they've stuck with football.
I also want to add this.
Where's Duncanville going to be in 5 years?
Right.
I feel like Allen may be down.
Allen is a little down right now. But here's the thing too. Here's the thing about that within the state of Texas is where things change. It's kind of like the kids in Dade, a lot of the top kids, Dade Broward, go to private schools now. In DFW, Dallas Carter is north of I-20. A lot of those kids have ended up south of I-20 now in high schools, whether that's Cedar Hill, whether that's Lancaster, whether that's Duncanville, whether that's DeSoto, even Red Oak. So there's been that movement south of I-20 in Dallas. Dallas, South Oak Cliff got a lot of those kids to stick around. When Reggie Samples was at Skyline, more of those kids were staying north of I-20. But right now, it's all south of I-20. I think when we look at that list, to your point, Bobby, in about 5 years, Duncanville will probably be in that area with Miami Central, Northwestern, as far as numbers in the NFL.
Blake, go back to the city one, if you don't mind. I want to show people something.
There you go.
Discussion. Dallas is not on that list.
It's going to be.
It's not going to be. It won't be. This is my point. Skyline, Carter, White, W.T. White, none of those schools producing players that much anymore. South Oak Cliff. Dallas is by far a better football city than Detroit, Michigan. Detroit encapsulates more players, doesn't have the suburban guys playing football as much. They play basketball. I'm telling you, the basketball-football combo, Miami's like 7 or 8 down that list. If you include the Dallas suburbs, which is where the majority of players come from nowadays, whether it's Mansfield or Duncanville or McKinney or any of the Arlington schools, Jerry, the problem is the inner city schools in Texas are not emphasizing football like they do in Detroit, maybe, or in Miami. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not mad about it. I'm just saying when we look at numbers like IMG Academy and Aquinas is a private school. You mentioned all the private schools. I completely agree. Is a part of it is where are the best players? What are they playing these days? Cyprus is not considered Houston by this data point. Just to give you an example. That's not right. I mean, it's metro areas are much, much different.
Yeah.
Let me ask y'all this. Which two Texas high schools have produced the most NFL players?
Ever?
Yeah, all time.
High schools?
Yeah, they're tied. Both have 25. Which two Texas high schools have the most
NFL Ball players? High would definitely be one of them.
No, maybe.
Bobby's got one of them.
It's going to be East Texas.
It's been 50 years, Jerry, that Ball High has been producing guys.
Longview and Tyler. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Because, look, if East Texas, those kids grow up in those one horse towns, as you call them, or one school towns, Tyler, John Tyler, and Tyler Lee, obviously Legacy and Tyler High now. But that makes a lot of sense when you see Longview and Tyler on that list. As far as East Texas,
would you have went South Oak Cliff over Carter though, Jerry? Maybe Carter was a recent, maybe a 20-year run is the issue with Carter over Oak Cliff, who has been around. I mean, they've been.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's original Oak Cliff. Oak Cliff's been producing guys for years and years. A lot, I believe, in the 70s. I'll look at that kind of the breakdown of some of that in the 70s. I think similar to Galveston Ball, the 70s, early 80s, because Galveston Ball hadn't produced many of late. Mike Evans played football his senior year. I mean, Galveston Ball's, hadn't produced as many of late. Longview, Tyler, but Dallas, South Oak Cliff. I, if you look back, I think in the 70s, early 80s, I bet more than half of those from Sauk is when they came through.
Any of those guys, think about this. Any, they going to add to any tomorrow night? Or over the weekend, ooh. Longview, Ball High, Oak Cliff, Tyler, and Yates. I don't know of any.
Nah, Manny Muhammad, 2 years. South Oak Cliff's going to add some guys because they had too many Division I players the last 3 years not to. I mean, it just comes down to a numbers game. I mean, they signed, 13 D1 kids in the one class. They're going to have a couple of pros out of that. There's no doubt about it. So South Oak Cliff's going to add to it. We'll see Longview. They've had some pretty good players come out of there. We'll see on that. Galveston Ball, probably not. Now DeSoto's going to add Byron Murphy. We'll see when they start popping up because they've had a few guys of late. Will Muhammad's cousin be one of those? And Jabbar Muhammad a year from now was DeSoto. DeSoto's going to have a few pop up here in the net. I bet they have 5-6 guys drafted from DeSoto High School here in the next 2-3 years.
So a lot of people would be surprised that Houston North Shore not on that list as well. They had an influx starting in the late 80s, in my opinion. They were not a they had some players before that, but mostly late 80s is when they started really amping up that program of under David Amon as well.
Yeah.
All right, Jerry, it's time, man. Are you ready to do the Manscaped, Dad?
Here I am. Look, I was thinking about the way to introduce Manscaped today. So here's what I decided to do. We're going to use the Lawnmower 4.0 today. If you were at the Texas A&M spring game, well, if you were one of the 3,500 fans there and you watched 11 punts, you had time to manscape during the spring game in College Station Center. That's all I got to say from what I hear. 11 punts and not many fans in the stands. You were probably bored. You probably broke out your 4.0 there in Kyle Field. Call them what you want, knee knockers, golden nuggets, thigh slappers, but our friends at Manscaped refer to them as the boys. Not every man has children, but every man is responsible for their two boys below the waist. When your little guys have more hair than they need, trust Manscaped for all your grooming dreams. Boys need love too, so join the 10 million men plus worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com and use code ONTEXAS, all caps, for 20% off free plus free shipping. And you heard it here first. The boys are back in town like the punters are back in town at College Station. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the waist. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Yep, three ball trimmers. Isn't that awesome?
You know, Batman has the bat signal. You have the razor sound signal. I was just thinking about that. That's like your thing right there. Oh, man.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, guys. Well, a big day, Jerry, for Texas hoops.
Big, potentially.
Yes. Can you tell folks about that?
Yeah, so a big decision coming today for Texas basketball out of the portal. Jordan Pope, for those that are on TexasFootball.com or listening to me talk, last year my guy in the portal that I loved was Cam Spencer, the guard that went to UConn. Texas tried to get in on him. They already had Max Asemus. They already had Tyrese Hunter in the fold. That was going to be tough. This year, my guy is Jordan Pope from Oregon State, guys. Averaged 17.6 last year for Oregon State as a sophomore, 6'1 and a half, 170 pound point guard, combo guard, can really score it. It's two level score that can finish, but he's really in the mid range. He shoots the three well, makes big shots, big clutch situations for him. But he is going to announce his decision today between Texas and Texas A&M. He had North Carolina. He had a lot of people come after him. I think even Arkansas might have fielded a call there after John Calipari got the town. But look, Texas or Texas A&M today for Jordan Pope. Not many times Texas and Texas A&M go to prolific prep high out in Northern California and battle over a guy, but this is one of them. And I think Frank Haith, Chris Ogden, Ty Larson have done a really good job identifying guys in the portal this spring for Texas. Jordan Pope, I think, is a really big recruitment, big decision today for Texas basketball. Julian Larry out in this Indiana State, really good point guard creator. Trey Johnson, obviously, coming in is going to be a first-round pick, potential lottery pick. Kendall Weaver, great energy player. I think he'll be a dynamic type of sixth man for Texas as he continues to grow. And then you have Tremont Marks, 6'6", left-handed guard. So Texas has bigger guards now next season than they had this year. I think they've molded a really good group of guards. If they get Jordan Pope to kind of tie it all together, I think Texas will have won a huge recruitment. And I think he's a difference maker player. I think he's the guy that will be up for all SEC honors at the end of the 24-25 season. And we'll see if that's at Texas or Texas A&M. But if Texas gets him, their backcourt will be ready to roll with anybody next year because they'll have more versatility, size, shooting at multiple spots, multiple guys who can put the ball on the floor and create. I think hat tip if Jordan Pope goes to Texas to Frank Haith for helping build and Chris Ogden and Ty Larson for helping build a really good backcourt through the portal.
You think Rodney Terry and his group have a better grasp of what they want to do in the portal now? Because let's think about it. Last year, Rodney Terry was kind of thrust into being the head coach at the very last minute. He got the interim tag removed after making the Elite Eight, right, Jerry? You think that with more time under his belt this year, they've taken maybe a better approach in the portal this year than they did last year?
No, I think the deal is Texas had a lot of turnover back-to-back years, essentially. So you were starting with not truly knowing what you were going to have back. Guys were testing the NBA draft waters. You had to make some tough decisions. The one thing about the portal is you can't control when guys go in. I mentioned the Cam Spencer guy. He ended up being, I thought, probably the best guard for college basketball in the portal. He didn't go in the portal till late. So I think the continuity this year, the staff, that was a lot of turnover. Beard came in, had one player, Brock Cunningham, had to build a roster, right? Then what happens with him? You go through another transition period. But the reason I mentioned Frank Haith's name is I think he's tremendous at this stuff. I think he's a really good identifier of talent. He always has been. I've told the story before. He convinced Rick Barnes to take P.J. Tucker without ever seeing him play. That's a lot of confidence in your ability as an evaluator because P.J. Tucker was a 6'5 power forward in high school. What is P.J. Tucker? What has he grown into? A tremendous player with a great career in the NBA. But that's a guy who's really confident in his abilities. While A.J. Abrams may not have been a pro, Frank Haith identified him as a great shooter early on, and A.J. Abrams had a really good career at Texas. Frank Haith did the same thing with Kenton Paulino, who was not highly recruited, brought him in as a key role player in the Texas program, a guy that can make shots, be a secondary ball handler. Kenton Paulino hit one of the biggest shots in Texas history against West Virginia. So I think Frank has a real knack for this stuff. I think that's his strength. So I think a hopeful year for him and RT and Ogden, Ty Larson, all those guys to work together, I think is better prepared Texas. But the one thing that you like to see from the Texas staff, or you've liked what you've seen, they've addressed size at guard. They have, and Jason Kent from Indiana State, a 6'8", college power forward, combo forward player. Texas now has the ability to play a big lineup in a better way offensively. Because last year when they played a big lineup, it was bad for floor spacing. They were going to struggle to score. It wasn't going to work. The parts they've kind of put together now is going to make for a better big lineup that can put more pressure on a defense and keep the floor space. So we'll see what Jordan Pope does. I think it's a big decision coming up for Texas and Texas A&M.
All right. So we have a couple of super chats here that we need to knock out. This first one from Jack. Thank you once again, Jack. And he's going back to when we were talking about the portal players. He said, like you guys always say, give me a guy with a chip on his shoulder.
That's why Blake Monroe's here.
That's right.
That Rangers chip on his shoulder finally came off last year.
Yeah, it did. Starting to build back though because we can't get healthy. And then we have one from Cinco de Mayo. Thank you, Cinco. He says, guys, the thought is that Brooks' departure may have been NIL related. Who makes the call on who gets what and how much when it comes to these NIL deals? This has always seemed unclear, at least to me.
Well, I mean, look, I think that NIL, regardless, I'm not so sure. Like, Texas has the funds. If they would have wanted to keep Terrence Brooks, I think Texas would have kept Terrence Brooks. So let's just get that out of the way. I think that was a decision to move on based on a number of different factors, whether it was Terrence Brooks gaining 12 pounds from the end of the season to the beginning of spring ball. The fact that he's not necessarily that speed guy they were necessarily looking for. There's a number of different pieces there. Right now, my understanding is that the Texas One Fund, in coordination with basically whatever organization is out there, tries to figure out what the NIL value is worth. Clearly, Texas coaches have some input on who they want, even if that's arm's length. I think that NIL had a small factor in that. Terrence Brooks in Texas may have had a disconnect on what one thought the other might be worth. That being said, if Texas thought that Terrence Brooks was necessarily the answer at field corner for 2024, I think Terrence Brooks would still be a Longhorn. In other words, I think Texas moved on from Terrence Brooks as a starter. He's blown some coverages. He did so again in the spring game, and I just think if you're going to be a third-year starter, I don't necessarily know that's what Steve Sarkisian and his group want to deal with. It's a survival. Hey, guys, it's a survival of the fittest world out there right now in college football, especially if you're talking about potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. They don't just give it to you. You got to earn it. So think about it that way. Hey, Blake, speaking of earning it, we got to earn it real quick with a read of about Gooders, our sunglass sponsor for this week.
That is correct, guys. And sunglasses don't get any better than Gooder. And for $25 there, you can't beat it. They're 100% polarized. They don't slip. They don't bounce. And they're always releasing new styles to keep you happy. They even have a pair for Longhorn fans. It's Gooder, and it's good for you and good for your wallet. I told you I stand behind them. I ordered a pair for my kids the other day. You've heard Jerry rave about them. You've heard Bobby talk about how good Gooder is. If you don't believe us, go online, see their more than 50,000 five-star reviews. They stand behind their product with a 30-day free return window and a one-year warranty. Gooder will have you looking stylish, and it's easy on the wallet. They're so affordable, so you don't have to worry about breaking or losing them like I do with all the other expensive glasses out there. So if you want to support the show and try a pair, Gooder is giving On Texas Football listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/ontexas, use promo code ONTEXAS to get that free shipping, and they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/ontexas, using promo code ONTEXAS, and take advantage of that free shipping offer from Gooder.
Hey, I want to say this real quick about Gooder. Nothing irritates me more than I go on a nice vacation in the middle of the summer. It's getting ready to be summertime. And I've got a $200 pair of sunglasses. Yes, I'm that guy that used to do this. And then I lose it. I mean, that just pisses me off. There are many things that irritate me in life. Losing an expensive pair of sunglasses is probably A1. And so I like Gooder because they actually have some they have some good styles while not being ridiculously expensive. I'll put it that way. And so if I lose $25, it's like I went to the movies and just saw a dud movie, as opposed to going somewhere else and having like a T-bone steak that was not cooked well. It's just totally different experience, and one that that's why I like Gooder personally.
Odin Horns, is Bobby hosting a huge party when the Longhorns play Commodores in Nashville? Yeah, we'll give out Bobby's home address here in a couple of weeks.
We are going to have a party, by the way, but that's a different story.
Hey, by the way, there's some breaking news, which we need to address. Reggie Bush apparently got his 2005 Heisman back. But here's the good news for Reggie Bush. Here's the bad news. The voters still got their vote.
And they got it wrong.
We need to take their votes back. You know, I mean, that was, I don't know.
The Heisman hasn't exactly been winning lately. Their tone-deaf tweet about O.J. Simpson's situation and now giving Reggie Bush. I guess they're on a run with USC running backs these days.
Yeah.
Hey, we got
news for the Heisman committee. they won't have to be giving another Heisman out to a USC running back anytime soon.
Not as long as Lincoln Riley's there. No.
Hey, guys, we got some questions that are being asked quite a bit here in the chat, so I want to go ahead and knock those out. Number one, Fasusi canceled his OU visit this upcoming weekend. Jerry, they want to know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I don't have any thoughts on that. We'll see what happens there with the official visit process with Michael Fasusi. It's going to continue to be a fight there. A&M's trying. A&M, look, we've talked about this before with A&M. Offensive line is their key position of need in this class, so they are all in on the offensive line in the 25 class, which that's actually a strong sign that they're actually identifying a real weakness right now for them. So we'll see what kind of true run A&M continues to make with Fasusi. I think Texas, there's some confidence on Texas side, and we'll see if Oklahoma ends up being the main competition for Texas at the end of the day for Fasusi, because they have been for months. But he had a great visit to Texas with his father a couple of weeks ago. They spent a lot of time at the McCombs Business School, along with the Texas football spring practice. So these recruitments, I mean, these are bloodbath recruitments for guys like this now. And if you notice, it's all SEC teams. So, I mean, that's where things are at right now. Texas A&M, Oklahoma are really battling out for Fasusi. We'll see if Oklahoma, I don't think there's a lot of confidence on the Oklahoma side that they may win out in the end on this one. So maybe that's their feeling is starting to happen a little bit.
And then another question that we're getting, and guys, we've had a lot of people join us since we first started the show and talked about it, but a big visitor on campus today, actually got there yesterday, but people are wanting to know updates on that visit and if you're hearing anything.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard anything yet. I mean, he got in yesterday evening about 7. Today's the big day on the visit for Dominic Williams and his family. This is a sit-down with Sark. This is a sit-down in the position room, film room with Kenny Baker and PK and Nansen. I mean, this is touring the university from an academic perspective, taking a look at Austin. He's been to Austin before, but the university itself, this is the big day. I mean, it's 8:51 right now. Breakfast probably finishing up. He's going to have a great visit to Texas. I'd be shocked if he doesn't. But at the same time, look, this is the first time as a recruit that he's going to sit down and have a conversation with Steve Sarkisian and Kenny Baker, who Kenny Baker's not a guy that he knew because Kenny Baker was at Western Kentucky, then into the NFL. So this is a lot of first meetings. I mean, Dominic Williams, everybody's just going to look to NIL, but football is huge part of the equation here. So there's going to be questions asked. There's going to be questions answered. I think that's going to be big, but I think today is the key day for Dominic Williams' visit. Like when you get in the evening, get checked into the hotel, you say some highs, you may have a little dinner, but today is the big day, and it's just getting going.
Okay, guys, let's get into some questions. Plenty of time to get
by the way, Blake, I want to address one real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Everybody, somebody asked about Riley Pettijohn. I still think things are positive for Texas with Riley Pettijohn.
All right. Well, we've had a few questions on that as well. So like I was saying, get your questions in. We got plenty of time to get to as many as we can here. And let's start with this one, guys, from Zach. And Zach says, I am overreacting to the timing issues that Quinn and the receivers had in the scrimmage series that, of course, he saw him in. Please ease his mind, Bobby and Jerry.
He didn't have time, really. I mean, a couple of times he was like out of sync because of the pass rush. I mean, Ethan Burke's in your face with his, what does it, Jerry say, 84-inch wingspan?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an issue, period. I would say that those issues that we saw are symptomatic or emblematic of what we had heard throughout spring practice, right? Remember, we had been reporting that Texas, the passing game, did not look in sync in the spring. It's amazing what happens when you get time to pass, though. Whether that's Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, or Trey Owens, it doesn't really matter. And so I wouldn't take too much from it. At the same time, I think it's something to be watchful for. Because, I will add this. Isaiah Bond did Quinn Ewers no favors.
He was a more comfortable receiver in the second half of the spring game.
Right, exactly. And Quinn didn't play in the second half.
Yeah.
So there's a little give and take there. So I'm not ultra concerned. I do think that their what's the best way to put it? Their repetition and consistency early in the season, I'm going to be on the lookout for. I think by the mid-year, they'll be fine, right? Because they'll be game-tested, game speed. They'll understand it a little bit more. But early on, I'm a little – it's not like A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy and Jordan Whittington were ready to go last year. This is a different group with a different level of experience in this offense.
Makes sense. And then we have a super chat here from Jay Lee. Thank you, Jay. He says, I listened and watched the deep drive on Brooks. He was actually pretty good to play, but then would have inexcusable costly bust.
Yes, I mean, that's what I was talking about. I mean, inexcusable is one word. I mean, the long pass play to DeAndre Moore was just a breakdown. And he also did it 2 years ago against TCU in Austin. He had some issues. That's just all there is to it. Now, that being said, good player. It's like I'm talking about. That's what I'm asking Jerry. He and I have been talking about this. You know, is it that he's not really a corner at the next level and his best position's safety? Is it he doesn't run well enough? What is it? Or does he not see it well enough as a corner to run, to play the switch routes and that sort of stuff, Jerry? I don't know. We don't know exactly what it is, but for whatever reason, Steve Sarkisian decided to move on. That's just the bottom line. And there's not much more we can say, whether it's, you know, he's made some big mistakes, et cetera. I feel like, you know, the thing that's interesting in the SEC, and this is what brings this up for me, is Jerry makes mention of they want larger corners that can really run and take on the X receiver on the outside in the SEC. That's because they run a lot of prototypical two tight end stuff in the SEC, right? A lot like Texas does, which is uncommon in the Big 12, okay? That's actually more common in the SEC. And that means you're going to be on an island because you're trying to stop the run more often. Your corner is going to be on an island and going to have help over the top. And if he can't manage that, that's the issue. And so I think that Steve Sarkisian and the Texas secondary had a choice to make and clearly made one.
Let's jump over to recruiting for a second. A lot of people asking about the Corian Moore, Jerry. What do you have on the LSU wide receiver commit?
Yeah, no, he was not in Austin for the spring game. He was running in the regional track meet in Waco. I remain the same on DeCorian Moore. I think there's some confidence in Austin. I think it's going to come down to Texas and LSU. That's not like anything breaking news, but I'm going to keep saying that because Ohio State and Oregon will get visits. I think he'll make a final decision before his senior season. I think Texas has done a great job recruiting him. They had a really good visit. There's some UT in his in the family corner there. Hoping that Texas ends up being the pick. I don't think seeing the spring game. I don't think that's going to change. That changes anything for DeCorian Moore if he was there or not, or if he watched it on TV or not. If you didn't watch the Texas offense last year and think that it's a great spot to be as a wide receiver, you know, and I know people are saying, well, his Arch Manning's performance. I mean, that's fine. But look, it's Texas is if you didn't watch Texas last year and understand it's a great place to be as a wide receiver. And LSU could say the same thing, by the way. They're about to have two guys go in the first round. Okay. So then what else is there, really? I mean,
Jerry, I was going to say, the one place that you might say has an advantage on Texas in the draft this year is LSU, because they're going to have two guys go in the top 15 or so. Granted, they also had a Heisman-winning quarterback. They didn't play much defense there, that sort of stuff. But LSU had has a good. I don't know if they have as good a system as Texas, but certainly with those two guys last year, they lit it up. And actually, with Jaden Daniels as the trigger man, they lit it up.
Look, I think on a certain level here with DeCorian Moore, he's just going to have to decide where he wants to be, Texas or LSU. I mean, look, I think that he's going to have to decide where he wants to be at the end of the day. He really likes both places. And I remember talking to him over a year ago, obviously, it's well over a year ago at Duncanville. And when I talked to him, I was like, he really does like LSU more than people thought at the time. He likes Texas a lot as well. He's been in Austin more than anywhere else in his life because obviously his mom's from Austin, a lot of family members in Austin. So he's at the end of the day, he's going to decide where he wants to be. But I have a percentage, you know, what it's worth. I had 51 on Texas. I'm probably 52, 53 on Texas. But we'll see how it plays out over the next, 3 months from these kids making final decisions, essentially.
And then our next question comes from Nate Russ. He says, I grew up in Forney. Jerry, do I need to go home and watch running back Javion Osborne on a Friday night?
Yeah, if you're in Forney, he's a good watch. And Forney's got some good players, too, right now. It's obviously that area east. I don't have to tell anybody that lives there or grew up there how much it's changed. There's actually two high schools now, right? North Forney as well. There's some good players at Forney outside of Osborne. But Osborne's one of the top 2026 running backs in the country. He was on campus recently and a guy Texas really likes. Obviously, they have Racine Guillory committed in the 26 class. But the 26 class in-state is tremendous, and Osborne's way up there on that list. But, yeah, if you're in Forney on a Friday night, not a bad guy to go watch play, not a bad team to go watch because they're going to have some younger kids as well. They got a lot of talent coming through right now.
And our next question, guys, we're going to switch gears and go back over to team-related questions here. And let's start with this one from Odin Horns. He says, is there a definitive weakness on the offense?
Wow.
Good question.
I don't see one.
I actually say no. Not one you can, like, point to that, like, oh, my gosh, this is a weakness, right?
Maybe, Pat, could it be – a little concern on pass protection on the right-hand side.
On the right side.
And Williams together without a tight end over there to help. I can't think of it. Jerry, I can't think of another one. Or think of one other than that, maybe. I'll tell you one. They're not a dominant run-blocking team at tight end. No matter, I mean, for example, I think Gunnar Helm is a passable blocker, even a good blocker, but he's not a great one.
Right.
So power run game, unless you involve Malik Ogbo, which then gives a tell a little bit to the defense. I don't know. Very few would be the answer for me. Very few if they have one. And if it is, I don't think it's glaring.
Right. I don't think anything's glaring. The one thing I say is, one, the conversations we're having now shows you how far Texas has come under Steve Sarkisian. But when you look around college football, everybody's got a weakness right now. Yeah. Even Georgia. I mean, the portal has caused every team to have a weakness or missing some piece to their team. I've said it before, Michigan won the national championship last year without a true number one wide receiver. I mean, so even Michigan team last year, was that because Xavier Worthy was in Austin? Maybe, but they didn't even have a true number one receiver on that team. So everybody's got something that their fan base can point to for sure, or a couple of things coming out of spring. I think Georgia fans have the same thing. Ohio State fans probably have some questions on a couple of things as well. So I think that's a good thing for Texas. But I would say, in a certain game, if something that pops up, especially the first half of the season, might be pass protection on the right side, like Bobby said, if they're not covered. Young players.
I want to go to this question real quick. Darwin Lemon, did Jalen Gilbo play in the spring game? Yes, he did. He started in place of Jadae Barron, who did not play. Barron saw some action not only at nickel, but also at corner in the spring game. Another news piece that I wanted to put out there, there was some thought that Austin Jordan, young man out of Denton Ryan would be entering the portal. I've been told that he, as of right now, he's not planning to do that. And so that's a little newsworthy. Now, could that change in, what, 7 days now? I guess it's 6 days left in the portal. It closes next Tuesday. That could change. But right now, Texas looks pretty good at that star position, not only with Jalen Gilbo, but also with Austin Jordan and Jahde Barron as well.
We're going to stay on the offense for a minute, y'all. Nate Russ says, who do y'all have as the third and fourth running back in the room, assuming Blue and Baxter are, of course, one and two?
Well, Wisner's definitely third. So I don't, you can just mark that one down right now. Fourth is between Gibson and Clark at this point. I don't know. I think both of those guys are interesting. It looked to me, and I could be wrong, Texas used Clark a little bit more in the passing game. Tried to, at least. They got him a couple different balls in the spring game. I think that fourth running back spot is more up in the air. I really do. I think Gibson and Clark are going to battle for it, and we'll see where it ends up next year or later this year. But Weiser's definitely number three. I think he's going to play in that Keelan Robinson role this year and then get more and more carries as the year goes on. And clearly, if someone gets injured, he becomes a bigger piece of the puzzle as well.
And Frank Davis wants to know, what's y'all's best guess on the starting offensive line come fall?
Jerry, I'll let you start with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think your starters in the spring game, the only position where I think the competition will continue to be real is going to be left guard. And I think that what will be interesting there is, you know, Cole Hudson played left guard, Neto right for Orange team in the spring game. We'll see if Texas is more run-based. I mean, you know, Kyle Fletze has essentially got seven starters, which I agree with Cole Hudson, Neto. Cole started 13 games at Texas before injury as a true freshman, really good football player. Neto's developing into a really good football player, can be devastating in the run game. So it'll be interesting to see. Will Texas rotate a little more? Could it be based on who they play and what they're trying to do in certain games and certain situations? That's very possible as well. But I think Hayden Connor gives you the steady for sure with a lot of experience. I think Neto is the as ahead as a run blocker, just in as far as natural power. I mean, if you watch the spring game, what DJ Campbell can do in the run game, Bobby, is kind of, when you go back and watch it a second, third time, you kind of say, hmm. And you saw it last year. So I think Neto can provide some of that in the run game. So where is that mix going to come from with Steve Sarkisian and Kyle Flood?
So here was a couple of my takeaways. So I think the starting lineup right now, if they were to start today, would be Kelvin Banks at left tackle, Hayden Connor at left guard, Jake Majors at center, DJ Campbell at right guard, and Cam Williams at right tackle. That is, if you're putting a bet in Vegas, that's like an 80% bet, because that's what it was last year. Just insert Cam Williams at right tackle and you're going to town there. The thing that I found in the rewatch of the spring game is this. Hayden Connor, I don't think, is the second best center on this team. And I know that they're trying to cross train him there. I think Connor Robertson is better than him.
I agree.
And so I don't think it's necessarily, you know, plug and play Hayden Connor wherever. I don't know. I wanted to put that out there because I thought Connor Robertson played really well at center compared to Hayden Connor, which was interesting because, I mean, Hayden is a better guard than Connor Robertson. So I'm not dissing on anybody here, right? It's just
right.
Connor Robertson has a little intuitiveness about the position, in my opinion. But other than that, I didn't see – I thought Neto had one issue in pass protection. The running back, Jarrett Gibson, kind of clipped his legs, and so the Vosick got to him, got to the quarterback. But all in all, if you're grading that out, I can see why Hayden Connor's going to start because he's a better in pass protection. Pass protection than either Neto or Cole Hudson. And now if they want to go back to right guard and play Neto or Cole Hudson over DJ Campbell, that's a different conversation. So, and Daniel Cruz, I just saw that comment. Daniel Cruz looked like
he's gonna be a stud.
Unbelievable. Now, I don't know if he's going to be a center. I'm still not there yet, but man, he could be a road grade guard that he's going to be something. We'll see what. I mean, he's just that dude. He looks like he swallowed an oak barrel. That's what, you know, just put it in his chest and let it go.
I'll say this on him, because some people have mentioned over the, since he committed, well, what's his arm length? Same as Creed Humphrey.
Yeah, long enough.
Y'all know I've been a big fan of Daniel Cruz since the first time I went to Richland High. Look, he's going to play in the league. He's going to play in the league a long time if he's healthy, guys. He checks all the boxes, plus the talent level. Just watch. I'm sure people noticed him pulling on the screen in the screen game right out of the gate as a freshman in his first spring game. That kid's going to play football a long time if he stays healthy.
Well, we talked about the offensive line blocking, but King Me wants to know, who do you see becoming the best blocking wide receiver on the team this season?
Wow. Maybe Matthew Golden from a willingness perspective based on what I saw. Now, if that's the case, that could be an issue for who starts. I don't know that any of them are going to say I'm a great blocking wide receiver like Jordan Whittington. Xavier Worthy, the great thing about Xavier Worthy, he was not a great blocking wide receiver. He's just not big enough. But he was at least willing.
Right.
Adonai Mitchell was bigger than Xavier Worthy, as we all know. But early in the year, he was not very willing. Right. So in my estimation, willingness to be a blocker and just help that one extra tick at wide receiver is what it's all about. It's not about sustaining blocks.
Yeah.
Right. That's a little bit different. Jonte looked willing, but a little timid at times, to be fair. I think Isaiah Bond did a little ole at times in the spring game as well. It wasn't a strong point, in my opinion.
Somebody asked, I want to hit on real quick, about Lamont Rogers, Ty Haywood, yes, offensive line recruiting. Obviously, Lamont Rogers is higher on the board for Texas than Ty Haywood. Ty Haywood's a talented guy. I think he might need a little time. Talented guy, Lamont Rogers. I mean, those guys are wherever they go. I think a year is going to be big for those guys. You know, I think Fasusi obviously is top tackle on the board. I think you get to Nick Brooks. I think you get to Lamont Rogers, Jackson Christian, Jordan Coleman are swing guys. I think Jordan Coleman's more likely to play tackle than Christian. I think Christian plays inside. So I think that's kind of where you're at with tackle at Texas. Right now, and we'll see. I mean, Ty Haywood is not a guy that has had a lot of interest in Texas, but we'll see if that changes. I'm sure Kyle Flood will go by in May, but the key there is they just need to get two tackles in the class. That's the main thing.
Okay, before we move on, Bobby, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about Adam Lowy and the Lowy Law Firm.
Yeah. Really thankful for Adam and his sponsorship. He's got 20 plus years experience doing this. He and his law firm. If you've been injured in a car wreck, truck wreck, automobile accident, or ATV, anything to do with automobile accidents, Adam's your guy. Give him a call if you think you might be due compensation due to an injury or a wreck of any sort. Reach out to him at lowylawfirm.com for a free consultation. Adam, we really appreciate you making it possible for us to come to y'all every morning. Our sponsors, guys, really do us a big favor. I know that a lot of people are saying, where do these – look, our big takeaway is this. We couldn't do this and make a living without them. So thank you so much to Adam and his group at thelowylawfirm.com. Again, if you've been injured in a wreck, car wreck, truck wreck, motorcycle accident, ATV, lowylawfirm.com.
This is a loaded question here.
We love those.
On the porch cereal. How many draft picks are on the current roster?
Wow. 30 to 35. That's where I'm going. I did this list, Jerry. I did this list the day after. I literally, you and I were at that first practice, right?
Yeah.
And I got the list from Thomas Stepp, the SID at the University of Texas for football. He and John Bianco and that group hand out the roster. And I remember you and I going back to the where we were staying and kind of putting check marks, because it's your first time also to see the new freshmen in the context of a college football team. So you could have thought maybe that Daniel Cruz was going to be an NFL player or Jordan Washington. But until you really see those guys in context and see how they work and that sort of stuff, you don't, it's not necessarily there. And you and I think it was either, I know I went down it, and I have that paper somewhere around there. I had actually counted either 32 or 33 was my number. That's a lot, guys. I mean, that's going to be top five in the country for sure. I mean, maybe Georgia, maybe Ohio State. Not maybe, but Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame right now, I think has got that kind in the trenches, but not at the skill positions. USC will be in that category. Yeah. Trying to think maybe who else. There'll be others that are in that 20 range, but I don't know that it's not many. I'll put it that way.
Burn Orange Horn, yes, UT men's golf leads going to the final round of the Big 12 tournament after shooting 13 under yesterday to take
13 under
as a team. Shot 13 under, so they're up a few strokes on Oklahoma State and the others.
You know, I wouldn't mind getting John Fields on this program. He's led a team to a national championship, had Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth. He's had some, he knows what it takes. I wouldn't mind getting him on the show. He's the, of course, the golf coach, men's golf coach at the University of Texas. Yeah.
And got to help with the Director's Cup standings too.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, y'all. This next one here from Scott. And Scott says, is Gavin Holmes physical enough to play regularly?
He's gotten more physical than he was last year.
Yeah, you saw that tackle as well, Jerry.
He's tracking the right way. Let's see if that, if he can take one more step where that continues. And I think he's getting stronger. He was a smaller guy coming out of high school that was really fast, had some good skill set to him. But you're talking about a guy that's probably 160 pounds coming out of high school. He's added strength to that frame since he got to Texas, and I expect that to continue. I think he's set up to he's going to have an opportunity to have a really good final year at Texas.
And our next question, we'll stay on the corners for a second. Max wants to know, is Wingo that fast, or does Kobe Black need to think about playing safety?
Maybe both.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be either. Wingo is definitely that fast, though. For Kobe's sake, I will say this. Wingo, when he gets on top of you, you're toast. Because not only is he fast, he's got that size that's going to allow him to stay on top of you. So if you let him behind you, you're not going to get back in the game. That's the thing. Like Isaiah Bond, you let him get back on top of you?
None.
Well, you might be able to get back in it because he's not real big. Right, yeah. Jerry? Ryan Wingo gets on top of you, he still has the plus catch radius.
Yeah.
And so he's done. It's really done. Is Kobe Black fast enough? That was the question we all had going into his recruitment. It's not necessarily was he athletic enough because he's hyper-athletic. Was he a good enough football player because he's a football-playing dude and makes plays wherever he's at. It's whether or not he had the speed to be a plus corner. And, we don't know that yet. I don't think we know yet.
And we're getting this question quite a bit, fellas, so we'll address this. We've talked about Terrence Brooks throughout the show, but Zach wants to know, who replaces Brooks? I assume you have a different answer than Black. And then Brendan, same thing. Do you think it's more likely we use Holmes or Kobe Black at corner to replace Brooks or bring in a transfer?
Portal.
I think Gavin Holmes would be next up for sure. You agree with that, Jerry?
If
there's no portal, it would be Gavin Holmes.
Today, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, today, fair. And then Takario Davis, we've mentioned as well, the young man out of Arizona. After that, I would go Gavin Holmes, possibly Warren Roberson next, and then Wardell Mack is more. I don't know that Kobe Black is a field corner. I'll just put it that way. And so if that's the case, I think he would be more of a boundary guy, which is behind Manny Muhammad at this point.
And by the way, Santana Wilson comes in June. I think from a technical standpoint, he's going to be ahead of the other freshmen, even though he didn't have spring football. It's his upbringing, obviously. In there, and I'm not comparing him to Manny Muhammad. What I am saying is they're both technicians. So Santana Wilson, even though he didn't come in the spring, from a technical standpoint, he's coming in ahead. A guy like Kobe Black, even though his brother played corners, father played Power Five football, he was more of a jack of all trades at the smallest
level.
He did everything. So you don't really concentrate on Friday nights and in practice at one position. So there's a development curve that comes with that. Wardell Mack played receiver. Look, I went to John Eric and saw him twice. He played as much receiver as he did anything when I was there. He played safety. He played corner. He played receiver. So these guys are pretty much lining up at a singular position for the first time in their life over an extended period of time. There's development that comes with that. Santana Wilson, like Manny Muhammad's been training to play corner for years. So technically, those guys come to campus a way ahead of the game in that regard.
I like how you explained that, Jerry, because people need to understand that a little bit. The question we all have on Santana Wilson is, does he have the long speed? And I think he has better long speed than, say, a Terrence Brooks, right? And I think he probably has a better long speed than Kobe Black. Wardell Mack also has better long speed. So the way you're discussing that, I like it's easily.
Rod and I were talking about it last night, Bobby. So we would all say, I think Manny Muhammad's not going to go to the combine and run 4.35 or 4.4 probably. But why he's such a tremendous player is he's always in phase. And I think you're going to see Santana Wilson be a guy that is in phase a high percentage at a time. So those guys are tremendous corners without having the elite combine testing long speed. Because if you always play in phase, I mean, Rod was breaking down the play. We were talking about it last night. The Jonte Cook's best catch of his UT career was the throw from Quinn. And if you think about it, great throw by Quinn. Really good catch, great catch by Jonte Cook. But Manny Muhammad's coverage was absolutely perfect on that play. And he even got his hand into the window a little bit. Absolutely perfect. That was a play where quarterback makes great throw with great timing. Receiver runs really good route, great catch. Manny Muhammad, you couldn't play it any better. Manny Muhammad is in phase so much of the time. That's what makes him, I think. Besides, he studies the game maybe more than anybody else at Texas. He kind of get the Earl Thomas vibes like that from what we're told. Will Muschamp told me years ago about Earl Thomas. So those guys, if they play in phase, there's two ways to be a great corner. You don't just have to be a jet, a 6'3 jet with long arms. That helps. But if you're not that guy, if you play in phase a high percentage of the time, you can be a great player at that position.
Okay, y'all, we have time for just a couple of more questions here. We're going to take this one from Jason Washington. He says, as much hype as there always is around A&M, do you think it's concerning to see such small turnout for a spring game? I'm just casually asking.
I thought that was interesting, Bobby. I don't know if you saw that, but I can't remember less people at an A&M spring game.
It's all those two percenters.
I mean, now maybe they were going to Big Ten spring games, hoping to move to that conference or something. I don't know, but yeah, that was a low turnout. I mean, I don't know.
You know, I feel like they've been sold a bill of goods for so long that it feels a little bit like Texas in like with Tom Herman and some of the false bravado that we saw at times. That people just knew wasn't true. I also think that A&M is entering a different era as far as the university is concerned. It used to be a smaller school, and now all of a sudden it's a big school. Some of their folks just don't have as big a tie as they once did to the university when they enter there. I think that's part of it. I think Mike Elko is a good coach. I mean, I'm not one of those guys that says everything A&M does is wrong. I never have been. I'll poke fun at him, but that's just good natured. I mean, when I grew up, it was Aggie jokes, right? I mean, that's what I grew up around. So it's not ill-intentioned or mean-spirited. It's just good humor, fun type stuff. I like Mike Elko as a coach. I think he's solid. I think that if he can get through this year and not have injury problems, I think A&M's going to win some games. The minute he starts having injury problems is the minute that resets on him and the expectations there, Jerry. And then what does that do his recruiting going into next year, year after, et cetera? And that's where, wow.
So
that's the spring game right there.
That looked like this looks like the Miami Hurricanes ACC championship game. All right. As somebody pointed out, weather related. Okay, yeah, it wasn't great weather, but don't say you're the ultimate fan base in college football, though. Get off your own bravado because y'all didn't show up. Okay, so here's the other thing.
Well, what great weather in Austin either? Exactly.
Right. So here's the other thing I would say is I think Mike Elko, to get the fan base behind him, is going to have to do it, to Bobby's point, with wins on the field, because he isn't the personality that's going to rile up the fan base and get them saying, all right, here we go, let's go tailgate. That's not who he is. That's not how he's going to win over a fan base. He's going to have to win over the fan base with wins on the field. Some guys can win the press conference and the fans are just like jumping up and down and they can't wait to go watch the product. That's not really his personality, and that's not his strength, and that's not who he is. So it's going to have to be wins on the field.
Some of the spring games from this past weekend.
What? Give me the ones that are
USC top left, Oklahoma top right, A&M bottom left, Missouri bottom right.
So here's the great thing about this photo: it can be weather both ways around. Hey, Southern California, you're at the beach. Okay, I mean, so that's the flip side of the weather. Oklahoma spring games, you know, it's not a bad turnout.
Oklahoma, jeez.
And that was Missouri.
USC, that's less people that show up for the, you know, North Shore High School spring game.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, they were just all the 280 people there were just wondering if Bear Alexander was going to show up.
Can we stop the run? Like, are people going to average 8 yards a carry against us again this year?
Oklahoma did charge for their spring game. That's a great point.
Yeah. Very true. Very true.
I guess that wasn't really the NIL fundraiser they hoped for, but they did charge for the spring game.
Hey, McBooger Balls 512. Thank you for the super chat. Says A&M jokes are still funny though, Bobby. A&M
yes, they are. I still get a kick out of them even at 54, and I should. It's like this old elbow to the gut.
Those USC fans were clearly excited to see the new defensive coordinator, weren't they? See what that new defense looks like.
Before we get out of here,
I can't blame him. There was probably reruns of Vanderpump Rules on Bravo or something.
Jared Johnson wants to know if you can give your prediction where Jordan Pope picks tonight. Obviously, that decision coming here in a little bit. We talked about it earlier. Give rehash it real quick for everybody.
Yeah, so it's Texas or Texas A&M. He's going to go to one of those two unless he pulls the ultimate rabbit out of a hat there. Look, there's some confidence in Austin. I haven't heard about any confidence in A&M. They don't return my calls, I guess. I don't call. Look, there's some confidence in Austin. We'll see what he does this evening. I think it'd be a huge, huge win for Texas because they've constructed a really good backcourt. If you get Jordan Pope, that guy, that puts you over the top, I think, in the backcourt. There's a little work to be done in the front court still. But if Texas gets Pope, I think it's a big win. And again, if this comes to fruition and he does pick Texas, I think Frank Haith, Chris Ogden, Ty Larson, those guys that really are behind that roster construction, not that everybody's not involved, but I think Frank Haith's really talented at this. I think that Pope, I think, is the best guard Texas could get out of the portal. I think he's a better player than Tremont Mark, especially in the college game. I think that would be a huge win for Texas if it happens.
There you go. And before we leave, Bobby, can you tell folks how and why they should become an OTFOG?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we first, I'll just give you an example. We first mentioned that we were hearing somebody was a defensive starter was going to be headed to the portal. And we reported that not on our videos because we didn't have a video scheduled. We actually put it on texasfootball.com. We've dropped news and notes like that all the time on texasfootball.com. We have a premium subscription that we just started 3 months ago, or excuse me, 3 weeks ago. A lot of people have already come on board. We appreciate you guys. We've tried to make it a nominal fee, just $39.95. You get $20 off a annual subscription if you use the coupon code OTFOG at ontexasfootball.com. I've posted some stuff up there this morning already on the portal. We're monitoring that. We're going to be obviously talking about the portal here as well today. But long story short, join us. Be part of the club, guys. Come in and hang out with you. Hang out with us and like-minded Longhorn fans if you can. No pressure, obviously, but we would appreciate it. Again, on texasfootball.com, use the coupon code OTFOG.
Okay, guys. And by the way, we're going to have a watch party tomorrow night for the NFL first round of the draft. Rod Babers will be on there breaking it down. I think CJ Vogel will be on there. Myself and Bobby will be in from time to time working on a couple of guests as well. For Too Broke to Pay Attention, Vanderpump Rules or Point Break Reruns. Hey, the great thing is that I think they were both on at the same time the other day, so USC fans had plenty to choose from.
Oh,
nothing beats Bodie's last ride in Bells Beach, Australia.
Okay. On that note, we're going to get out of here. That's going to do it for today's edition of Coffee and Football, presented by Adam Lowy and the Lowy Law Firm. We want to thank them for sponsoring today's show, along with Gooder and Manscaped. Thank you all for tuning in for the Super Chats, the great conversation. As Bobby said, head on over to ontexasfootball.com to continue that conversation with us. And then if you haven't already, be sure to like and subscribe. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime that we go live, post a video, whatever it may be. That way you're covered with Longhorns news 24/7. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Welcome.